Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Online and on DAB Digital Radio, Darren Goff's Cricket Week on Talk Sport 2.
Hello and welcome to Darren Goff's Cricket Week on TalkSport 2. I'm John Norman, and alongside me this week, Gareth Batty. The question we are asking, is this the start of an Indian summer?
That'll do nicely to finish it. You could keep the ball in the crowd, we'd all want it back. Fabulous game of hitting high class from both teams.
England beaten 2-1. We will talk about where it went wrong for Owen Morgan's men and where it went well for Virat Kohli's. Meanwhile, in England, though, the domestic T20 is being played out in front of bumper crowds and under sunny skies.
Easy as you like. The Birmingham Bears open their account in this year's Vitality Blast.
Yep, it's an old rivalry, but it's one that's gone Middlesex's way tonight.
And we will talk with Middlesex's Nick Gubbins about their start to the campaign. Also casting our eye over the former Surrey man who might end up captaining Australia, chat county cricket, and look ahead to the ODI series between England and India this week. You're listening to Darren Goff's Cricket Week on TalkSport 2. Gareth Batty is with me in the studio. Good to see you, Bat. You well?
Very well, sir. Yourself?
Well, I was a little bit dismayed to see you walk in this morning. Not because you're here and Goffy's off in Russia, but more because you're also flexing the kind of khaki chino flip-flop T-shirt look. And, you know, you're a professional sportsman and I'm flexing the same kind of outfit, but I am a journalist. And, well, I'm not sure I really come away from the comparison particularly kindly. So I'm going to have to rethink my wardrobe next time you're in.
Not sure about that.
You well? All well at Surrey? I mean, top of the table. We'll talk about that a little bit later in the county championship. Not quite as a positive start in the Vitality T20 Blast, but certainly interesting times not too far away from TalkSport Towers down the road at the Oval.
Yeah, I mean, look, two losses in the first two games is not ideal. Of course it isn't. But there have been some really good positives for us that, you know, we don't have Jason, we don't have the two Currans, we don't have Finchie. There are a lot of players that are sort of massive pillars within our team that are not around. And in both of our first games, we were in positions to win them. And that's all you can ask for, really, as professionals. We've just got to find a way to get over the line, which is the bit at the minute that we've been training this morning and we'll be training every day this week to make sure we get right.
We'll talk a bit about that. We'll talk about T20 cricket in general. Middlesex's Nick Gubbins is going to join us on the show. But first off, I suppose it's about England, it's about India. I mean, those scenes, what a country we live in, by the way, that can have 24 million people watching the football on an evening or listening to it as England try and make it to the final of the World Cup. You've got queues forming in a leafier suburb of South London from 5 a.m. to watch the tennis. And you've still got full houses up and down the country and in Wales for T20 cricket. I mean, I can't think of a nation that can boast a population that just comes out to watch sport, different sports in the varying guises that we've got in this country. It's absolutely brilliant.
I think it's amazing for sport in general and for kids, getting kids out there and getting them playing all sports. It's not about playing one sport, it's about playing all sports, because hopefully when they get to an age that they'll pick, All the motor skills of different sports rub off. You'll be a better sports person, whichever sports you pick. And I think that's a brilliant thing. Seeing kids everywhere, loving the football, loving the cricket, the tennis. I think it's amazing. The first time I've ever been to Lord's, and it's not been all sort of shirt and tie and the straw hats and a little bit dowdy. It's coming home playing on the tannoys at Lord's during the 2020 game. That was it for me. I was like, this is what 2020 cricket, but this is what sport's all about. It's not just about, oh, I'm just a football supporter and nothing else, or I'm just a cricket supporter. Everything's rubbing in and merging into each other, which I think is a brilliant thing for any young person out there. I think it's great. It's a great time for the country. I think it's brilliant.
I think you're right. I mean, here at Talk Sports, you know, we're known as a football station at times, and quite rightly so. We mirror the nation's favourite sport. But, you know, if you cast your eye around the production floor here at Talk Sport, and if you ask the question, who likes football? You know, pretty much every single person would put their hands up. But if you were to ask us the follow-up question, who here only likes football, doesn't follow any other sport, I don't think anybody would stick their hand up, because there's county cricket lovers, there's snooker fans, there's rugby enthusiasts, all of them. So, yeah, it's a brilliant time, and certainly the weather helps. Okay, well, let's look at the T20 series, okay? England swatting aside Australia, 5-0 in the ODIs, and in the one-off T20. And then India come and knock in, a team that you, of course, played against relatively recently for England. I mean, they just, for me, just seem to have... It's not so much the personnel, it's not so much the variety, it's not so much the stroke play or the power hitting. They just seem to have the mentality of a team that are very used to winning. And that is complete opposite to what Australia brought to these shores a month or so ago. Well, a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, I mean, it's very easy to get carried away about how we swept aside Australia. Let's not forget the players that they're missing. We don't need to harp on about that. Very, very difficult in a short format of T20 and even 50 over cricket to replace world-class players, because actually it's those guys that get you in positions so that you can get the 25 in 15 balls that we saw yesterday, the young fella at the end with Sharma. Sharma gets the plaudits for the 100. Of course he does, because the 100 won the game. Our guys got to 60s and 70s, which was brilliant to watch, and they smashed it everywhere. It was brilliant. It was amazing. But for us to go to the next level, we need those guys getting the hundreds, and Australia didn't really even have the guys, you know, getting to the 50s and 60s to at least affect a game so that you've got some sort of a total for the bowlers. The one thing I would mention is, wow, pretty difficult for the bowlers with the wonderful weather that we're having. Some of the small grounds we're playing on, I think I saw it was 57 metres, one of the boundaries in
one of the straight boundaries. If you're fielding... at mid-off, you're not far from the boundary.
Oh, you're in danger. Particularly if somebody like me's bowling, it's going to get rattled at you at mid-off or mid-on. No, and I think England cricket is in a pretty good place with the white ball. It really is. You look at how we line up. It's, you know, it's exciting, isn't it? And I think we're moving in a wonderful place. And we just need to look at India just to say, why are they just a tiny bit better? And it's only a tiny bit. They're probably 1%.
It's not golf. It's
1%.
Plenty of questions come out of this series of games, the third one in particular, dropping Joe Root. Now, I didn't see that coming.
No.
Now, Paul Farbrace was quoted during the week saying it wasn't going to happen. So I'm not sure exactly what changed there. Stokes, how can you keep Stokes out the side? But were you surprised by that decision? And you've got to say it didn't actually pay off in the end.
No, very surprised. But they're at that point, aren't they? Who do you leave out? You know, is it a Hales that's the next man off the line that you leave out? And he just won us a game at Old Trafford. Do you leave out Jason Roy? Well, you can't leave out Jason Roy because he keeps getting runs for fun. The captain, I suppose, is probably the one man that maybe hasn't scored as heavily as some of the others, but he's the captain and he's got us into this wonderful place. You just go down the list, there's nobody that you could really leave out. So it was going to be that horrible decision for the person that had to have that conversation. I'm pretty sure that Root would have been a gentleman and magnificent about it. But I would always pick Root personally. It just gives you that bit of stability within a chaotic, sometimes atmosphere that you find yourself in 2020. He's the guy that generally pulls us together. Definitely does in one day cricket. 20 overs, can we do without him? They obviously think so. But it was, wow. That's pretty...
It's a bit of a call.
We're in a good place to be leaving out somebody as special as Joe Root. Let's take the positive.
Well, look, from the Test captain to the one-day and T20 captain, let's hear from Owen Morgan.
Tremendous start with the bat. Again, Jason Roy and Josh Butler proved quite a dominant force up top, created a great platform for us to capitalise on, and we didn't do it justice. We got ourselves up to about a par score and probably fell between 20 and 30 short. Just their execution of shots, trying to find a boundary, weren't quite there in the end. I thought we would have had to do something special with the ball, having only scored, like I mentioned, a par score. But that wasn't meant to be. When a guy like Rohit goes out and peels off 100, it's very difficult to defend on a ground like this. When you do play against Pakistan and India, they do have a lot, big following. So it's something that we're used to now. During India, for instance, a couple of years ago, we talked about it quite a bit. And this series is no different. So it'll continue for the rest of the summer. It's not going to change. But hopefully we can learn as we go along. And you know, this series for us has produced three different performances. Completely different one that turned at Old Trafford. Cardiff ground was a bit bigger, completely different aspect, in which I thought we played really well. And today, a high scoring set for us, which is, you know, puts us under different pressure, which is nice. You know, we learn as we go along as much as we can and hopefully improve.
Well, yeah, Owen Morgan there speaking at the end of the game. You're right in what you're saying, Bats. When you look at the team, it's the captain himself that possibly wouldn't be in there if he didn't have that small C next to his name. Can't take anything away from his abilities as a captain or even as a batsman. But unless England go down the route of saying, sorry, Johnny Bairstow, you know, is he really needed at number six? I'm not sure. You know, he's an opener, really, I would suggest, in this form. It's difficult to see how Joe Root gets back into that side. The other problem, of course, is that T20 has been the format that England have chopped and changed a lot. But do you think that Joe Root, it would just put more pressure on him with his intention to play in the IPL? Because if he's not playing for Yorkshire and he's not playing for England, you could almost see it. I'm sure it'd be magnanimous in his when he got the decision that he was going to be rested or dropped. But he wants to play IPL cricket. And being dropped for England isn't going to help that happen.
Well, it goes one of two ways, doesn't it? It's something that's a real problem for Joe, and he finds himself on the sidelines and very frustrated. Or he goes the other way, and he somehow finds a way of getting into the team. How that, it might be unfortunate for somebody with injury or whatever, and then he goes and absolutely sets the world alight. It goes one of two ways, doesn't it? It's either brilliantly positive for England, and he finds a way of getting in, and he absolutely scores millions of runs, or arguably our best all-round batsman isn't going to be playing, which is, you're in a good place to be at that. But
if you're winning.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
If it doesn't, you know, sow some seeds of discord down the line. Plenty more to talk about this, because there's also a question about whether England are maybe being a little bit too cute. You know, India came in with five bowlers. They all bowled four overs. England were not, only Adil Rashid bowled his full quota. In that third ODI, in that third T20, David Willey bowled three, Jake Ball bowled three, Chris Jordan Wood bowled four, in fairness, Liam Plunkett three, Stokes two, and Rashid four. So if you're not going to bowl Ben Stokes out, let's not forget, it was only a year and a half ago that Joe Root was the linchpin in the England batting order that helped them chase down 220 against South Africa in a World T20.
Yeah, I think you look at the balance of the team of India. The guys that you might be leaving out might be a Suresh Raina, who didn't bat yesterday, which is incredible. Pandya went above him at the end. Pandya went above Dhoni, the finisher.
That's a sign of things, isn't it?
I mean, that's just, it's incredible that we're even talking about that happening. So I think the two teams and two squads are in totally different places. I think India were never really going to drop their two massive high-profile sort of guys. Raina, definitely, I wouldn't have thought. Whereas England have made that decision, and it's shown to have bitten them a little bit. But I think it's also brave. As long as the thought process is correct, that this is how we're going to amass the total that we believe we need to get, definitely 200 pitch by any stretch of the imagination. So how are we going to do it? If you've got a load of guys that go in and play a lot of shots, that's very high risk. Who's the guy that glues all that together? And I suppose Rohit for India yesterday was the glue, but wow, what a performer he is. You know, the way he strikes the ball effortlessly, he's more in a Root mould as opposed to a Jason Roy, a Butler, who goes out and just absolutely smash it. There has to be You know, there's different ways to score the runs, and there has to be a way of thinking about that. And I think Joe Root definitely fits into the format of some real smart, intelligent cricket that we saw Sri Lanka win years ago. I think it was about 5 or 6 years ago. They won the World Cup with Mahela and Kumar, who were very much Joe Root type players. The touch, when all the others then can go out and bash it everywhere, but the real class will always be class.
You're listening to Gareth Batty and myself, John Norman. Darren Goff, well, he's away in Russia this week with Drive, but you're still listening to his show. It's Darren Goff's Cricket Week on TalkSport 2.
Online and on DAB Digital Radio, Darren Goff's Cricket Week on TalkSport 2.
Six. It's flat, it's into the crowd, end of the fourth over, 43 without loss.
There is a man out there, but he's just fetching it from the stand. 4-4-6. Again, outside off, again, 6. 50 for Roy and just 23 deliveries. Up in the air, Kohli comes in. I don't think he's going to get much advice on that. That is a dolly. And Stokes has gone. And Dhoni practices the run out. Oh, awareness from Dhoni. But that just shows how aware MS Dhoni is.
Really entertaining innings there from England. Put into bat by India. 19 fours, 12 sixes. Chris Jordan's gone. 198 for 9.
Down the pitch again. Chipped. Over mid-wicket and chipped for 6. Oh, has that been caught? It has. What a grab that is. Shikhar Dhawan can't believe what he's done. Brilliant from Jake Ball.
6 off the second ball. Has it got the legs? Chris Jordan. Oh, what a catch. That is absolutely brilliant.
Oh, what a screamer. Moves to 99. Fabulous innings. Absolutely wonderful from Rohit Sharma. His third T20 century. That'll do nicely to finish it. You could keep the ball in the crowd. We'd all want it back. Fabulous game of hitting high class from both teams. India win the series 2-1.
So that's how it played out on Sky, and thanks to Sky Sports for the audio there and in the first section as well. Gareth Batty, when you look at India, I mean, you spent some time in the company of Virat Kohli a year and a half or so ago. Unfortunately, you're supposed to be spending a little bit more time with him in the last month, but he didn't make it to Surrey this year. Did you get from him, I mean, he seems like such an intense character on the field, and he speaks very well to the press. He seems to deal with that much better than it possibly used to. Do you get from him a character that knows how to switch off when he's away from the game, or is he on 100% of the time?
No, I think from speaking to sort of Murali Karthik and Vikram Solanki and Harbhajan Singh sort of when we're out in India, and you see him around the hotels and what have you, and he'd randomly just say hello and have a chat. He does seem very relaxed away from the game, which is a great place to be, because once you cross the line, it's all about winning. And he's definitely got that aura about him where he doesn't care less about anything else other than winning. He has those moments where he teapots, he'll stare at players, he'll shout at them. But I think they all know that once they get back in the changing room, it's all forgotten about. It's just because he wants excellence on the field. That's what he strives for. And he's not going to apologise for that. In the changing room, I'm sure he will be one of those guys that's going round everybody and arm round and I've got your back on this. And you can see they've got a very settled squad. There's not a lot of change in there. There's a couple of young fellas who've been added in, and he showed some real faith in them by playing them at Bristol the other day. And leaving out Yadav, I mean, that's an amazing thing from the young man getting a 5 for only a game ago. So I think, and from what people are saying around the change room, around the group, he's quite sort of approachable. He's pretty chilled about things. But there's a ruthlessness about the end product, and he wants to win at all costs.
He was one of the reasons Zafar Ansari gave for his decision to to walk away from the game. Not just Virat Kohli, but also the likes of Ben Stokes and Alistair Cook and Joe Root even. This inability, no matter what you're doing, to accept second best. Living every single ball. That's what Virat Kohli said he wanted to do.
Yep.
That's all right if you're doing 120 balls, you know, and or twice a game, or twice in a day. But, you know, is that... Can you maintain that? I mean, is that even possible? Is there no risk of real burnout, especially when you consider, you know, India play even more cricket than England do?
Oh, obvious that there's huge, huge risk of burnout. You see it with some of the tennis players. They're amazing for 3-4 years. They win everything going, and then all of a sudden they drop off a cliff. There's injuries, and you don't see them for a little while, and then it takes a while to build yourself back up. That's just basically the top end of professional sport, which I will never... ever understand as a player. I've been around people that are at that level, and there is an intensity about them. There is a drive that is a bigger drive than I feel like I've got a drive, but compared to them, it's
so
second
even
to none.
In, I mean, you've shared a dressing room, you mentioned, with players like this. I mean, you've sat in a dressing room with KP and Ricky Ponting in recent years, but do you kind of look at them out one side of your eye? And there is, from the moment they walk in to the moment they leave, you just know there's something slightly different about them.
There is, to an extent. They've obviously got a God-given talent. Let's make no bones
about
that.
It's not just mentality, of course, but it's coupled. It seems to me that at the very highest level, it's the drive and the mentality is coupled with talent as well, of course.
Absolutely, and I think it's evolved over my period of playing. When I was younger, I'd see these guys and I'd be like, oh, that's brilliant, you know, what a talent, and blah, blah, blah. Never really take in what they actually did. But, you know, KP, love him or hate him, you watch him train. He was always the first one there. He always hit more balls than anybody else. He always trained harder than anybody else. And it was just because he wanted to be the best at the end of the game. He wanted to be the man of the match. He wanted to be the man that people were talking about. Kohli, exactly the same. Ponting, slightly different. Ponting, just an absolute cricket badger. Studies the game, loves the game, understands it. Now, I don't think he would switch off too much. He might switch off on a golf course or having a couple of beers in a bar. But,
watching the greyhounds.
But yeah, but long and short of it, he lives and breathes cricket. And it's not a problem for him because he loves it. It's just absolutely going through his body the whole time, 24/7.
When you hear from Ricky Ponting, you know, the lengths he would go to the day before a game, he would take himself away and visualise what the opponents were going to, how they were going to try and get him out, how they were going to bowl, where he was going to score. And then the next day he would go and stand on the pitch and go through the whole same process. I mean, that takes dedication. I mean, okay, for the first year of your career when you're trying to get up to standard, but to be doing that 15 years in, the amount of time and mental effort that must have taken, I think, geez, that's incredible.
Oh, it is absolutely incredible. And we saw it with, we were very lucky to have Kumar Sangakkara the last few years. There were certain games in his first 18 months where he turned up and you were like, he's guaranteed 100 today. Just
really?
Absolutely.
Yeah, you just knew.
Right in a book, he's getting 100. There was just something different. He'd sort of...
That's weird, isn't
he'd
it?
He'd get up in a
is
morning...
Is he the only person that you've kind of got that feeling from?
Yes. Yeah, he is. Yeah.
I mean, how often would you be proved correct that was... He would go out and make a score?
Give or take every time, you know, 8, 9 times.
Just something about him that day...
Sort of eyes glazed over slightly. When you were batting with him, we wouldn't really talk. Whereas normally, he's just the best bloke in the world.
Intense focus.
Real intense, real meticulous about everything. Never affected anybody else, but you were just sort of, oh, he's on today. And wow. He genuinely, every time he got runs, more often than not, he got 100. It was quite incredible.
That is extraordinary. It's also very interesting. Myself and Gough, we were out in Dubai, actually. You were there as well, weren't you? In the MCL, a tournament that most people have forgotten and others are trying hard to. It even happened. And we interviewed, sat down with Kumar for half an hour.
Yeah.
He spoke so well, as you know, he does. It was after his first year at Surrey, and he was talking about Folks and Roy and Burns with real fatherly pride, actually. And now he's behind the commentary, he's in the commentary box, and it's very interesting hearing him talking about Surrey when he's commentating on them. And he is still, or England with the Surrey players, you can still hear in his voice that he cares how they do.
Oh, absolutely. And he's still on all our groups, you know, all the WhatsApp groups.
Really?
All the boys are. Oh, he's still on him. He's taking the mick out of the boys like it's yesterday he was playing. But I think he knows that the extra year that he played with us, he made such a difference for the development of these players that we're seeing coming through. Rory Burns had the season of a lifetime and, you know, arguably should have been around the England setup, A-level, whatever, for the last 2 or 3 years.
Might
and
get that chance this year. If
absolutely, yeah. And he will do this year, I'm sure. You've seen Jason Roy go to another level. The balance and the poise he's starting to get on a regular basis. And we're seeing that on consistency of striking the ball, because there ain't many better players of striking a ball than Jason. And then we see Folks, who's obviously away this winter, the Ashes. I mean, we've got the Curran boys. You know, we've just got a lot of very good young talent. And I think Kumar saw that and it excited him. And it was something he could actually leave a bit of a legacy to say, actually, I'm going to leave this place better than when I arrived, because I can affect these guys. I can help them to hopefully get to the levels, or somewhere near the levels he did.
Brilliant stuff. Gareth Batty with me, John Norman. Into the break. Let's just hear, though, looking back at that third T20. Virat Kohli speaking about the win and the series as a whole.
The comeback from the bowler especially was outstanding. At one stage, we thought, you know, they're going to end up getting 225, 230, which would have been really tough on this pitch. But I think the character they showed from after the start England got was something that we're really proud of as a bowling unit and as a team as well. And certainly myself as captain, very, very happy to see that. We knew that, you know, we have to make the batsmen feel that they will commit mistakes at some stage. And we have the quality to bowl those wicket-taking deliveries as well. I think we executed those pretty well. And, you know, we applied decent pressure on the batsmen and pulled the game back nicely. You know, 25, 30 runs in this format can be massive because you don't have that much time in the game. But I think the comeback from the bowlers, knowing it's a crunch game, was something that we are very proud of. It was difficult for the bowlers, I have to be honest. The pitch was really good to bat on. You know, it was really, really flat and we enjoyed ourselves as batsmen. Would have been cruel on any bowler, I guess. You know, England got 200 odd, we got them, you know, a few balls to spare. So I think it was a brutal day for the bowlers. I don't like to look at hindsight and think, you know, we could have added another bowler. We backed something, we went ahead with it. And the guys produced the goods for us and came back really nicely.
They did produce the goods. Centuries, two century makers in the three matches. There's a fifer as well for a guy that they ended up dropping for the last match. India looks strong in the T20s. ODIs to come. It starts on Thursday. Trent Bridge, a day-nighter there. And we'll talk a little bit about that with Gareth Batty later in the show. But before all that, we're going to be turning our attention to T20 Blast, the Vitality T20 Blast, and speaking to Middlesex's Nick Gubbins. All of that coming up here on TalkSport 2. You're listening to Darren Goff's Cricket Week.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Online and on DAB Digital Radio. Darren Goff's Cricket Week on Talk Sport 2.
You're listening to Darren Goff's Cricket Week on Talk Sport 2. A funky bed, I think, is what our producer Sam described this music as. Look at that. He's 21. 21, Sam? 24? 22. Yeah, when you stick four fingers up in the air, mate, that usually means... How does sticking four fingers up in the air mean 22? It means four. Oh, well, anyway. There's been a series going on in Zimbabwe, which normally wouldn't create too much interest for the wider cricketing public. But Aaron Finch, a guy that you know pretty damn well, actually, one of the few to come out of the tour against England with some credit, promoted back up the order, scoring runs. And whilst Pakistan beat Australia in the final of this tri-series involving Zimbabwe, Aaron Finch is being mentioned in dispatches as a potential captain of the T20 side. For you, he was a popular player within the Surrey supporters. I'm not sure whether he's popular or not within the dressing room. You could probably tell me. Do you see him as captaincy material? And I suppose a follow-up question would be, if he can do well in the T20, then why not the ODIs as well? Because I'm not sure Tim Payne will be sticking around too long.
Yeah, the one thing about captaincy in the shorter formats is you want the guy with a bit of experience, played an amount of cricket, knows what he's going to do, knows that he can fulfil his role. World record holder Finchie now, obviously, can do that. He's been around a lot of different franchises, been around a lot of different teams, and probably to this day, I've never met anybody that has a bad word to say about him.
Really? So he's
a good stand-up guy. He's been great in our change room. You know, just a solid, good, honest guy. And he'll have some funky ideas. He'll have some very simple ideas. I wouldn't think that would be such a bad idea, if I'm brutally honest. I suppose the only downside would be he is connected with a lot of different franchises around the world. Maybe something might have to give to funnel a bit more time into a captaincy job for Australia.
He's always come across as a guy that desperately wanted to play Test cricket as well. And he's playing for his country. It's obviously very, very important to him. You mentioned nobody having a bad word to say about him. It just flashed into my mind that that run out involving KP. Were you playing that day?
I was, yes.
And the cameras showed Finch's face. He was sitting outside the dressing room at the Oval as KP walked past him. He'd been absolutely sawn off by KP, hadn't he? And run out. I can't remember how many he made. Was there? Were you party to the makeup, the kiss and the cuddle after the game? Was it?
I think the changing room is like Vegas. What goes on in the changing room stays in the changing room.
Fair enough. Fair enough. It was a bit cheeky to ask. So Surrey's T20 tournament hasn't got off to the best of starts. Not just because you're playing, but but they've come close in both games. You'd have to say Middlesex and Kent, the two teams that they've gone down. I know a lot of people have been talking about that, and you mentioned it yourself. On and off air about the players that aren't playing, but that can't be an excuse for the fact that the two games didn't go Surrey's way. But it's also the kind of tournament that you can very quickly get on a bit of a roll and start climbing the table. How are Surrey assessing how it's gone so far?
We've not got over the line. That's the nuts and bolts of it. We should have points on the board and we haven't, so that's not a positive. But you look at both games, we had periods in the game that we could have put our foot on the throat and got over the line and won both games, which is a real positive when you say that there are a few people missing. The negative, obviously, isn't that we've got over the line. A really disappointing, tough loss against Kent at the Oval on Friday night was something we've got to, tie our shoelaces up and get
that
on.
That was
with
a
it
bit
now
of a shocker, because yeah, I was away this weekend, but I was keeping an eye on the score, and you know, Surrey were 130 odd for three, chasing 170. I thought that game was in the bag.
Yeah, we were cruising. It was probably a 185, 190 pitch. It was flat as your hat, and we were cruising it. Well, we needed sixes for the last 10, with 8 wickets in the hutch. That was a game that we lost rather than the other way around. Those are all good learning curves if we learn from them. We can't make those mistakes again. We're certainly in a better position as a squad for 2020 than I thought we would be. There's been some players who've put their hand up. Folksy and Burnsy playing up at the top have played beautifully, striking at 200 both of them, which is a great thing for us, because we've got very good top order players to come back in Roy and Finch and maybe a couple of others that might want to go up the order. And from the bowling, we've just been a bit inconsistent. We've kind of got it right and we've kind of got it wrong. But I think that is nature of the beast of 2020 cricket. The weather's amazing. Scores have been relatively good throughout the country. The one thing about the South Group that we've always said, all teams beat each other. You could be sitting at the bottom as Hampshire, but we all know that they're a really, really dangerous team and they could beat Sussex tomorrow night if they were playing. You've got to just get on your mettle. You've got to start getting some sort of momentum. So that's our challenge. Get over the line. Find a way. Then once you're over the line for your first game, you're a chance of getting on a roll and then all of a sudden it snowballs. And we've seen it in the IPL with Mumbai and teams like that lose the first 4, 5, 6 games and still end up winning the comp. So it's certainly not panic stations, but we need to pull our socks up.
Nick Gubbins was part of the Middlesex side that played against Surrey at Lords the other day. Came out on the winning side. Nick joins us now. Thanks for joining us on Darren Goss Cricket Week, Nick. A bit of a strange start for your boys as well. We're just talking with Gareth here about Surrey losing their first two games. Middlesex started off well, but have lost a couple as well. It must be a very easy tournament to go one way or the other, I suppose, in terms of the form stakes.
Yeah, good afternoon, guys. Thanks very much for having me. As Gareth put it, it's very much a game of momentum. And kind of one guy can swing it either way in any kind of game. It just takes one person to come off the bat or one bowler to have a day out with the ball. And it really does kind of flip the game on its head. So we found out at Chelmsford the other night and also against Gloucestershire. We just didn't quite get our momentum going. But yeah, as Gareth said, you know, if you get one win away, then it kind of snowballs from there. And we're just really looking forward to kind of putting on a stretch of matches, really.
Hi, Nick Batts. I'm going to sit here now, a very jealous man, because you've got arguably one of the best spinners ever in Dan Vettori in your changing room being your coach this year. What does he bring to the party? And I'm trying to pick your brains here because I loved watching him play and playing against him. What's he sort of bringing to the party for you boys?
Hi, Bets. Yeah, good to see you again, obviously, after the other night. I was kind of walking away from you last time I saw you. You were going a bit mad. So
it was a straight one. It should have gone for six, pal.
I was looking to take you into the grandstand just before Sterlo obviously got out. But obviously, I was thinking no to one. And it just slipped on. So, no, well bowled. But, Dan Vettori, he's a really, really great guy. So it's just great to, having grown up and watching him, it's great to be able to work with him. But he makes it a very, very fun environment for us. And obviously, he picked his brain too much about spin bowling because, although I back my leg spin, I don't back them that much. he's a very relaxed guy, and he tries to just make us go out there and have fun and enjoy ourselves, and never really take a ball off. So, hopefully he can bring us success, but at the same time, it's also down to us players going out on the park, as you know.
Absolutely.
Nick, I want to ask you both this question, actually. What's it like, sometimes as a Surrey fan, I sit in the crowd, well, not so much over the last couple of years because I'm usually working, but I sometimes sit in the crowd at these T20 games. And at times, if I'm being totally honest, say Surrey are playing Middlesex at the Oval or at Lords, for instance, and Bats takes a wicket, not necessarily yours, but I'll jump in the air and I'll be, really happy and punch the sky. And at times I look round and I'll sometimes think that there's a lot of people in the crowd, but they aren't all necessarily watching the cricket. Do either of you two get that kind of feeling? Is it something that you think will change in time because suddenly you've got 20,000 people in the ground that weren't necessarily there 10 years ago? But do you ever get the feeling that it's almost a social occasion first and watching cricket second?
Do you want to go, Nick, or do you want me to?
Yeah, no, I'll definitely, there are times when obviously you're playing and it does kind of seem like a big pre-drinks for those city workers. So it does seem like that sometimes, but I think at the same time, when you have a close contest, especially like the one we had the other day at Middlesex against Surrey at Lords, it turned out to be quite a close game in the end, and I think everyone was on their seats. It's also a bit different when you go to other places like Chelmsford. I'm sure Gareth knows them. They are watching the cricket, and they're right on your case when you're on the boundary. So you get a few strange things thrown at you then, I think it depends on the quality of the game. If it's drab T20, which isn't really kind of a contest, then it can be a bit of a pre-drink. So when a game of cricket's good, like it was the other night, I think everyone's kind of enthralled with it.
Yeah, I think I agree with Nick to an extent there. I think it's slightly different north of the river because they've all got shirt and tie on and they're a little bit snuffy about it. Whereas down south, we've all got pint pots on our heads and shouting and just living the dream, as it were, that evening. But it's something that certainly at the Oval, at Keir Oval, we've tried to sort of get a bit more sort of Surreyfication, shall we call it. So the flags are handed out and trying to, particularly the younger fans, who are probably there for Surrey anyway, trying to get their parents and that sort of thing a bit more into the Surrey sort of vibe. And like Nick said, you know, you're always going to have your City boys who are having a few drinks, and it's just nice to be a prelude to their night out sometimes.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. returning to the cricket, I suppose, Nick, big season for you, not just with Middlesex, but of course England aspirations as well. Division 2 cricket, Middlesex, I suppose, it hasn't really happened in a way that many observers forecast. Haven't possibly won as many games as you're expecting, but again, must be a difficult season returning to Division 2. How do you weigh up how the season's gone on a personal level and also for the team?
Yeah, I mean, beginning with the team, it's one of those, you know, kind of those early matches. There was a lot of rain around, and at the time it was almost a flip of the coin of who was going to win the match or not. I remember some of the pitches that I had a look at. You know, I was out injured with a hamstring, but I was looking at the pitches and like, Jesus, you know, I'm glad I'm not playing as a batsman. It's almost, you know, a flip of the coin of who wins it, really. And that, we got on the wrong side of a couple of those, and also on the right side. So it kind of gave us a bit of a stutter to the start of our season. You know, at Middlesex, we pride ourselves on playing, you know, similar to Test cricket, you know, long games, you know, bowling maidens, batting long and trying to take everything long. Whereas in Division 2, everything happens in a bit of a flash. And I think, yeah, we definitely have taken some time to adjust to Division 2. Also with that pink ball game, obviously the other day at Kent, we were rolled out for under 100 twice in some strange, you know, quite interesting conditions by all accounts. So I think all we need to do, you know, coming up for the rest of the season is try and get on a roll as a team. And you know, as soon as you put together a couple of wins, then you do climb that table quickly, as Gareth knows, having been there.
Yeah, Nick, you've started personally, apart from the injury and whatever, you've started really nicely, haven't you, in the Champo? I think am I right in saying you're averaging plus sort of 70 and in a pretty good place personally? Is that from a big winter sort of England stuff and working hard, or is it just something you've extended from previous good years you've had?
I think it's probably more of an extension. I think last year clearly, you know, didn't go to plan for me personally, and also Middlesex. I just think, you know, having had that injury at the start of the season, it did give me a bit of time off in between the winter tour to actually come back, refresh, and also just groove a few technical things that you probably would be able to do if you weren't on a winter tour. So it did give me a bit of breathing space, which then I think has allowed me to start the season and kind of hit the ground running, really. And obviously missing out on those early conditions would help any batsman. So I think I'm fortunate in that respect, but I think it's just a continuation of the years gone by, you know, in cricket. Sometimes things go well, sometimes they don't. It's a very fine line between failure and success. So I think, you know, this year, you know, so far it's fallen slightly on success, but, you know, it can very quickly change to failure. Without not much changing at the same time.
Brilliant stuff, Nick. Well, look, thanks for joining us on the show. We're going to be exclusively broadcasting live coverage of the Sri Lanka series later this year. So you never know, we might see you there.
Yeah, you never know. But yeah, thanks very much for having me, guys, and wishing you and Sari all the best, Gareth.
Yeah, good luck for the rest of the season, pal. Go well, eh?
Cheers, guys. Thank you.
Online and on DAB Digital Radio. Darren Goff's Cricket Week on Talk Sport 2.
You're listening to Darren Goff's Cricket Week on Talk Sport 2. Goffy is away in Russia, hopefully cheering England on to victory in the World Cup. I'm alongside Gareth Batty. Could it possibly be, Gareth, that in the last 2 months I could see Fulham win the playoff final at Wembley, get promoted to the Premier League, England win the World Cup, which is just ridiculous, and Surrey win the championship? Because I'm taking an eye, look at this table here. Played 7 halfway through the season, won 5. Only team in both divisions yet to suffer a defeat without wanting to jinx it terribly. But it's been really impressive stuff, isn't it? I mean, a lot has been spoken about the captaincy in the form of the captain Burns, Ollie Pope. I mean, his record is absolutely sublime. But, you know, it's key passages of play, isn't it? Just like we were speaking earlier, it's key passages of play. Let Surrey down against Kent. Halfway through that Yorkshire game up in Scarborough, for Surrey to come back from a deficit of 80-odd runs, to even hold them to that at one point, actually,
yep,
and to comprehensively beat a team like Yorkshire on their own patch, to do the double over them now, they're that I'm sure at the end of the season, the team will look back on and go, you know, they are crucial moments, not just in that match, but in the seasons, which hopefully, without getting, I know you won't get too far ahead of ourselves, could be a very successful one.
Yeah, look, the guys have been going in a good direction for a while. And the fact that we've played on surfaces that have allowed you to take 20 wickets this season has made a huge difference with Ricky Clark, young Sammy Curran, Monty Morkel, Amir Verdi coming in at the start of the season and bowling really, really well. We've taken wickets, which in a weird way has taken pressure off the batters. They can just go out and play and they can watch and play the ball on its merit. And our top three sort of run scorers in Burns, Pope and Fulkes have been quite magnificent. Their numbers on some of the surfaces that we've played on are through the roof. It's brilliant. And oppositions haven't been able to live with us. So it's kind of that ability to take 20 wickets, which means we can win games rather than previous years been a lot of draws and not losing particularly, but not winning particularly. You get on that roll, like we were talking about 2020 cricket, and you can see some young fellas are putting out some great performances. I think the club has been in a good place for a little while, but I certainly think Rory taking over the captaincy has been a brilliant thing. It's a new energy, it's a new burst of life. It's been great for him on a personal level. I didn't think he could take his batting much further than it was previously, because I think he's been magnificent for 2 or 3 years, but he has done. And he's transferring that into white ball cricket now, which would have been something that people questioned. And I think it's been good for the whole group. It's revitalised and got us into positions to win some games. And 5 out of 7, you know, if we were winning 5 games in a season before, we were saying we'd win the championship because of the batting points. So, no, it's a great place to be.
Has Burns changed? Has he grown with the role? Are you watching a man who's possibly walking around the oval with a little bit more assurance in his step? Not that I'm suggesting he didn't have that before, but of course it was the unknown. It's a huge challenge for any player to become captain of a club, especially one with such a history, rich history as Surrey. But to lead his team into this position, but also to be leading from the front with runs as well, he must take so much confidence from that.
Oh yeah, he must take huge confidence from it. But it's not a surprise as far as I'm concerned. From 2 or 3 years out, it was always Burns takes over the captaincy and takes us forward in a great place. I think he's been the standout opening batter in the Championship who's not played for England in the last 4 years, probably. And I think numbers
especially
back that
in
up.
That position as well, yep. I suppose, as opener.
100%. Numbers back that up. And he's doing a great job as captain.
Nick Gubbins, who we just had on a few moments ago, says something that if Goffey was here, I know exactly what he would have said. And that is that essentially there are pitches out there where a toss of a coin will determine who wins the match.
Yes.
Right? Now, Goffey would be of an opinion that that's possibly one of the reasons why we've seen two outsiders win the title in the last couple of years.
Yep.
And he also suggests that that's why when we go to Australia, we can't bowl anyone out because you don't get the same kind of pitch assistance. Would you say that the standard of pitches is too result heavy?
It's such a fine line, isn't it? Every county club is there to produce England players. Of course it is. We're a sport that domestically that is our job. And yes, Surrey want to win trophies, Yorkshire want to win trophies, whoever want to win trophies, of course they do. But ultimately, cricket is strong if the England team is strong. There has to be a balance, but I mean, I've had a bugbear for years that Durham, for instance, played on pitches where nobody could get over 200. It seemed around everywhere. They had seam bowlers who were taking 80 wickets a year, and yet few of them didn't play for England. And as soon as they got on flat pitches, they didn't get a wicket. And yet we turn up on a pitch that spins on day 4 and everybody's going absolutely bonkers about Somerset playing on turning pitches. Well, the ball's only going half a foot, but the ball was seeming half a foot at Durham. So I just think it's all wrong and in the wrong order. We go to the subcontinent, everybody complains we can't play the turning ball. Well, as soon as the ball goes off the straight for the spinners, everybody's up in arms saying, well, that's rubbish, it shouldn't happen. And I suppose to the other extreme, for the bigger lads, the fast bowlers, you know, could we play on some quicker pitches, which is difficult to get, one, because of our climate, two, and every single groundsman out there will be absolutely going mad if they're listening to this. The ring drains that we've put in around our squares are killing the surfaces that we play on, so we have to leave grass on it for the surface not to die.
Sounds like another hour of show, to be honest. There's a lot of topics there. Gareth, so much. So enjoy the last hour. Thanks so much for stepping in. Always an absolute pleasure. And we'll be seeing you over the summer and throughout, of course. For those of you listening on TalkSport 2, you're in luck. An interview with Hasan Khan about to come on the show in the next hour, the second hour of Darren Goff's Cricket Week. Hasan is such an interesting character. I actually met him, Gareth, at a diners club. Lunch at the Oval. Wow. He was one of the guest speakers. A brilliant guy. So that's coming up. If you're listening to the podcast, well, you'll just have to try and find that interview online somewhere. But thanks for listening. Goffy might be back next week. We're not quite sure. It depends on flights from Russia, I suppose. But you're listening to TalkSport 2. As I say, Hasan Khan coming up on TalkSport 2. But if you listen to the podcast, thanks for listening. It's Darren Goff's Cricket Week and it's on TalkSport 2.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.